A beloved seminary professor of mine, Donald Capps, once wrote that one of the goals of grieving, and one in which the pastor may provide assistance, is to gain emotional release from the attachment to the lost object. And this is done primarily through making that lost object a memory. Reminiscing or remembering with another person is the principal means by which we build such a memory, which in turn helps us gain needed emotional distance from the past. He stressed that this connection between memory and loss was integral to what he referred to as faithful grieving, where there is not a denial of the passage of time, an attempt to freeze time, to dwell in the period immediately preceding the loss, not a rejection of the lost object by claiming falsely that we did not love it anyway, but rather an acceptance that the lost object is gone and will not return. Importantly, this acceptance should be encouraged in those we love without offering reasons for why the other should accept the loss. The paradoxical thing, Capps stressed, and this from a Christian theologian, is that religious leaders and loved ones can err in providing theological reasoning for loss, that it represents divine punishment or provides a lesson from God that needs to be learned. This acceptance with reasons is what my professor called an unfaithful acceptance of loss. Faithful acceptance, by contrast, involves realistic, embodied awareness that something or someone is gone. Faithful grieving is best accomplished through creating memories of what can then be accepted as the past. This faithful grieving is explicit in our ceremony here at UUCMC of bringing into speech and memory the names of those who have departed this plane of reality. In doing so, we acknowledge the importance of experiencing, really feeling, the grief associated with our loss. Loss, however, it should be noted on this once-a-year commemoration, is something that is ever present in our lives. Even joyful choices we make create paths not taken, experiences lost to our biographies. Lines of loss crisscross our daily lives and can be felt even when they are not processed consciously. Loss isn't restricted to the deaths of those dear to us, but can be complicated and nuanced, experienced in various categorizable areas, even when one line of loss is preeminent. There is material loss, the loss of a physical object or familiar surroundings, a treasured toy, a family heirloom, a departed from dwelling place, a treasured view from the window. There is relationship loss, whether through death or other life exigency, emotional connections of love and trust and affection, physical connections of care and support and sustenance. There is intra-psychic loss, the loss of self-image and or self-esteem, a change to how we think of ourselves, qualities of character, aspects of dependability, of strength, of personality. There is functional loss, the loss of muscular, neurological, bodily realities, the loss of a limb's function, the loss of vitality, of stamina, of prowess, of coordination, of nimbleness, of endurance. There is role loss, the loss of one's place in socialized networks, the loss of one's role as a parent, as a sibling, a neighbor, a lover, a friend. There is systemic loss, the loss sustained to a group's core operations, loss to a team's efficacy, loss of collegial intimacy, loss of committee cohesion, loss of family equilibrium. We are saturated in the daily barrage of news with a foreboding sense of loss. Loss of democratic process, of districting and sovereignty, of national pride. Loss of access to health care, to voting rights, to affordable housing. The loss of environmental resources and beauty and property through global warming and flood and fire. In the face of so much loss, we may well engage in defensive acts of preemptive loss through removing our attachment from that which we fear we will lose in the future. While preemptive loss is a form of acceptance of loss, in that its very action is predicated upon the reality that life involves loss, this act of preemptive detaching is a kind of unfaithful grieving in that it disallows us from creating the bonds that make life worth living. Living life so as to have nothing to lose is perhaps the most insidious type of loss there is. Abandoning in advance access to the beauty and love and connection that can admittedly make loss so painful, and yet which gives our life its song. As my teacher Don Capps urged upon me, to connect is to love, and to love is to care, and to care is to live. Really live. And there will be loss. Inadvertently and painfully, Dr. Capps taught me about the cost that caring and loving entails when, as I sat in the seminary library working on revisions to an essay that he championed, work that would become the kernel of my entire dissertation, he lost control of his brand new car and crashed into a wall not 100 feet away, losing his life on the very campus that he had enlivened for over 30 years. It was a terribly painful time. My mentor was gone right when I was entering into the lonely stage of dissertation writing, and yet the pain of losing him propelled me to continue, to endure, to persist, and ultimately to dedicate the finished product to his memory. What is so powerful about community and religious affiliation is that the connections we forge with one another prevent us from succumbing to preemptive loss strategies. Together, we bulwark one another to live more fully. Together, we faithfully grieve along the various lines of loss. We remember, we celebrate, we hold one another in care. When we are connected in relationship with one another, we know full well that loss will come, even as we delight in the emotional gift of human living that community represents. May it always be so. I invite us to remain seated and turn to hymn number 336, All My Memories of Love. Louise will play through it once, as it's one that we don't do very frequently. All My Memories of Love, 336.
So the ache of grief, the sting of it, the yearning for what can no longer be, it's intense at times, especially in the early days, months, or years following a loss. And then there are all of the anniversaries that stop us in our tracks. Whether your grief is for another place and time, or for a being whose life was intertwined with yours, your grief is all yours. The journey of it will be mapped in your own heart and body as uniquely as anything else about you. In those early days, it's not unusual to be blindsided by these intense emotions and then alternating with numbness and forgetting altogether that you have suffered a loss. There was a season of too many deaths in my family when my children were very young, and I would marvel at the way they could be distraught in one moment and playing as usual the next. This is a common observation of children experiencing loss, but I think adults do this too. We just hide it a little better. This forgetfulness and numbness may even be our own self-preservation. A body simply cannot handle the intensity of deep grief for sustained periods. We need to move in and out of that state. We need both distraction and engagement with those feelings. We need to eat and sleep and laugh, as well as cry, just to survive. Grief is as much a physical phenomenon as an emotional one. In much the same way as the love that precipitated it, it's carried in our bones, in our bloodstream, and in our hungering flesh. The physicality of the lost touch, the scents and sounds of another reverberate in us. The story of what was so much a part of our lives has to be retold and retold and reintegrated to become less surreal, to catch us up with our current reality. This is what makes grief so useful and necessary. If we do not go there, giving the stories and experiences their time, we risk an even greater loss. That's the loss of the love that our memories help to keep alive. This is why we celebrate and memorialize lives with real stories rather than the made-up and sanitized versions of people we love. The real love is for the whole person as they are and were and as we wish them to be. I like remembering that complexity of a relationship, the limitations and failings along with their successes. The story is richer and really more inspiring that way, because love is that way. Has any relationship ever been so perfect that there are not limitations to remember? Maybe when we lose a very young child, when the story has not had a chance to unfold yet, then we remember the fullness of their innocence. It is the potential of life that is lost and grieved. But love that has had a chance to grow and develop always moves through to deeper understandings of our limitations, if it is to be called love rather than infatuation. When I think about that season of loss in my family, a long time ago now, I'm amazed at the ways those loves still shape me. We lost my father, my 5-year-old nephew, and my mother-in-law and good friend in just a short 6-month period. I've often said that experience was the start of my call to ministry, but I'm less likely to say out loud that I would not have become a minister if my father and my mother-in-law had stayed around to weigh in on my decisions. While each was much loved in their own way, they also held the kinds of limited expectations of women, and me in particular, typical of their generation, that would have discouraged my professional ambitions. And I don't know if I could have gone out on that limb with their disapproval. Love is that complicated. It entangles us in webs of need and hurt, as well as the ties that keep us and sustain us. The losses that we suffer change our stories. Sometimes the change is unexpectedly positive, even as we grieve and mourn and look for answers to the puzzle of why and why not. So this is the real question. Will our grief break us or break us open to love again? Found in tragedy, in the pure messed up garbage of it all, there may be jewels forged yet. Out of our losses, when faced, whether bravely or not, some new turning, some new way forward can open for us. I've heard you tell the stories. Because of my grief and loss, I found music or art or dance or a way to give back and be of service. Because of this experience of love and loss, I found a way to live with more integrity toward my true self. I found out that I was capable of transforming my loss into gold this time. I do believe that love does not give up on us. In the face of loss, we can find another way. As Maya Angelou observed in this experience, she said, "We are weaned from our timidity. In the flush of love's light, we dare to be brave. And suddenly we see that love costs all we are and will ever be. Yet it is only love which sets us free." We all want to be loved and accepted. So much of life is given over to the pursuit of love, the giving and receiving of its limited and wayward offerings. Yet we are not always prepared for the cost of it. We are not prepared for love's temporary and fickle nature. The losses rack up. Especially in the longest relationships, there is just so much letting go to do. A brave heart or a broken open heart will feel that pain, experience that loss, and then make something out of it. This week at WAGO, in her discussion of grief at the holidays, Janet Fried reminded us to stay in the present, even as a lifetime of experiences inform this very moment. As memories and feelings flood in, the present, this one, this moment, today, here and now, is new. We bring all of ourselves to every new day, a collection of loves and losses that might make us better at understanding who and what we are right now. This collection could strengthen our ability to form new relationships or prevent us from even trying. This is where being brave comes in. When our hearts are broken by loss and failure, even when we have done all we can and life is still deeply broken in pieces all around us, there is a universal love that has not broken faith with us. And some say it never will. This is when faith in that greater love may help us through our despair. That love that will not let us go has not given up on us yet. So it is our human task to not give up on it. I continue to pray that instead of just breaking, that we be strong enough to break open. After the storms of grief and loss, may the lessons of having loved teach us to love again. May it be so.